Welcome to episode number 189 of 6 Pixels of Separation. I'm really excited to be here. It's February 7th, 2010. Let's get it on.
You're listening to 6 Pixels of Separation, featuring Mitch Joel from Twisted.
Welcome to 6 Pixels of Separation, the Twist and Ash podcast. Consumers have never been so powerful. Consumers have never been so connected. 6 Pixels of Separation navigates the world of digital marketing and brand democratization. This is your marketing wake-up call. This is 6 Pixels of Separation with your host, Mitch Joel.
Hello.
Hello. So who are you and what do you do?
My name is Avinash and I'm the author of WebAnalytics 2.0 and the analytics evangelist for Google.
Are you speaking into your microphone?
Yes.
Okay. Are you a first-time Skype newbie?
Exactly. I have this funny headset thing on my head now.
I would say you look great, but we're not doing videos, so it's fine. How are you, Avinash?
Good. Busy. I was telling somebody, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it may be tough working 18 hours a day, but you can't complain if you do things you love doing.
It's did anyone tell us that it was a recession? How come we're so busy?
No, I think that certainly many people are suffering from the effects of the recession, but one of the things about having so many, you know, things going, especially like you do and perhaps like I do, something's always hot somewhere and you're always busy being productive, adding value to the world and hopefully making money as well.
So you have a new book, Web Analytics 2.0. You have an older book, not even an old book, but an older book called Web Analytics An Hour a Day. You've got a very, very popular web analytics blog called Occam's Razor, and you're also the analytics evangelist at a small company people might have heard of called Google.
I know, too many hats. And I know you forgot, I have a startup called Market Motive in
Santa
Cruz. It does online marketing education, which is my little baby side project because I love teaching and it's an outlet for me.
When we last spoke, I think you dropped the bomb on the podcast that you actually were in the midst of finishing the book, which is now available, called Web Analytics 2.0. The subtitle is The Art of Online Accountability and Science of Customer Centricity. A mouthful, mm-hmm. but a smart mouthful, I guess.
It is. I wanted to share the paradox of where in the subtitle and the paradox of what people think. You know, people think the quantitative data is all about, you know, science and logic and applying things properly and everything works out. 2 + 2 = 4. But the reality is in the world of web analytics, 2 + 2 sometimes is like 6.5. And it's really more of using those numbers much more artfully than simply applying science. And on the other hand, Mitch, we tend to think of usability and surveys and testing and experimentation as all of the things that are, you know, soft and fuzzy and you know, all of those types of things. But the reality is all of those things are immensely measurable. You can apply the best of math when you do those things and find the kinds of insights that you thought with the level of confidence that we all normally don't think is possible. And that's really the play that I had going in creating the subtitle of the book. And I do have to give full credit to our mutual friend Brian Eisenberg for helping me come up with that subtitle.
Do you find, Avinash, as you're sort of going down this route, because I mean, I know professionally you've done so much before Google, and obviously there was a sort of motion of people interested in web analytics towards you and your persona and the way you think and the way you blog and speak. Do you find yourself, as you go down this route and as you're speaking more and more to companies, that you're becoming more of a marketer and less of an analytics guy, or do you find you're even more so embedded in the analytics side of it?
It's actually the former, Mitch. I think that as time passes by, and it's interesting, right out of MBA school, I went to Ohio State, right out of MBA school, I have an MBA in finance and in marketing. I directly jumped into the analytics world. My first job at Silicon Graphics was being a senior business analyst and working in marketing and data. And I spent that, that's really how I jumped into the pool, directly on the data side of marketing. And I've, and gradually, as I think of moving from Silicon Graphics to DirecTV to Intuit to doing consulting and now at Google, I think increasingly I'm becoming more and more of a marketer, because what I'm finding is the challenge is not our ability to access data. The challenge at some level is not even our ability to analyze and understand the data. I think what I'm finding increasingly the challenge is in getting the world to learn and understand and embrace how fundamentally marketing has changed because of this awesome thing called the web, right? Pick social, pick email, search, and it doesn't really matter. Matter what you pick, but the web has fundamentally altered the way marketing has been done, and especially when I wear my Google hat, I end up working with some really really large companies in the world, and I find that the fundamental problem, the fundamental hindrance to their progress on the web is not data. It's the mindset that they bring to the table when it comes to marketing on the web, and they don't understand how fundamentally it has changed. So that's what I am. I am a marketer, and I talk about marketing, and when I tell my short stories, the stories have this underlying theme of using data. So you're not faith-based, which is what marketing to a large extent used to be, but you're data-driven. But essentially, I'm telling you how to do marketing better. And one of the most fundamental things I open with now is to say that. Ability to find our audiences in a very targeted, specific, relevant way. So we couldn't do that. And now you can. With the web, you can do that. And the second thing that was even more elusive, and Mitch, you've talked about this all the time, which is our ability to then have a conversation with that audience and allowing that conversation to be a form of marketing. When I tell that story and then I illustrate those stories with how companies have done that on the web, that's what gets people excited about doing things on the web. And by the way, then they say, how can I measure it? Now you're talking.
So Seth Godin wrote a book called All Marketers Are Liars, and I believe I believe there is an opportunity to write a book called Some Marketers Hate Avinash.
We've
both been in audiences together, yes, speaking, and your message is somewhat hard and challenging for many marketers. I mean, you know this because they call your superiors at Google and tell them that after you present.
Exactly. I think that I'll give you an actual story. Last week, I was at the corporate headquarters of one of the largest advertisers in the world. I mean, this awesome company spends millions of dollars on advertising every few hours, not every few months, every few hours. That's how big they are. There aren't a lot of like companies like that. And yet, if you look at their online existence, my talk, essentially, I got on the stage early in the morning, 8:30 in the morning, with 600 people in there, and proceeded to shred their digital strategy, like everything digital, and to show how in a company with incredible assets that really is a blessing from God when it comes to products, when it comes to people, when it comes to money allowed to available to do market, they've got every asset in the world, and yet they are so stuck in so many ways in 1972. One of their websites, I kid you not, Mitch, one of their major brand websites, when the page finishes loading, there is a noise called ding, ding, ding. And when you move your mouse on that website, this is a major brand, by the way, when you move your mouse on their website, just a moving mouse, you're not doing anything, it goes click, 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 click. Think about that was GeoCities, right? I mean, no. and at the end, yet I think that I walk into the door with very much the brand perception or the persona that I am on your side, and I am going to help you change the world, and I'm going to help you figure out how to truly leverage the strengths that you have. I think that makes it a bit easier for people to accept perhaps some of the toughness of the love that comes. But I think that, and it's something that I think people truly appreciate about you when you speak, and I've learned a lot from you, Mitch, that people get the feeling you're on their side. And when you're on their side, they're more willing to listen and then more willing to change.
You talked earlier about this mindset that marketers have. Explain a little bit of what your perception is of their mindset. And I guess at the same time, when you say your perception, you're saying the reality of their mindset.
Yeah, no, one of the things is I think that we have done marketing so far mostly through shouting at people or interrupting them. And the latter is something that Seth Godin has talked about every day, if not every few hours, right? How we simply interrupt rather than asking for permission. But it reflects a reality of marketing. Today, much of the mental model that comes from at least medium to large size companies is to do television advertising and shout and interrupt people, or radio or magazines or all of these other myriad channels we have. And those channels are strong today. They will continue to be strong for some time now. But what marketers are not fast enough to understand and embrace is that these channels and these ways of succeeding are dying a slow death every single day. So it's not that you want to come and shout at enough people enough times, hoping for an outcome, but rather saying, I'm going to be a lot more focused in the way I do things. I'll give you a very concrete example of this, okay? I met the CMO of a very large beverages company in December, and their agency had reported to them, and the CMO told me that in the last year in the United States, the measurement of success for 2009, this was December, right? So 2009 was that the agency had reported that there had been 256 million brand moments. Now, there is a name that goes with the brand moments in quote. I'm not going to share it here, right? But brand moments. Okay, that's great. Now, this is a brand well known. It's on TV every 3 seconds, whatnot, right? And then I go to compete.com and I look at the traffic to their website over the last 2 years. And each month, in spite of having 256 million brand moments, this company had not managed to get enough traffic to their website that would fill a small town in Indiana. Now think about the two contrasting measurements. One is to say, we're going to measure brand moments, and that's our mental model. In a brand moment, I asked them what it was, and they didn't know. It could be a TV ad, it could be a magazine, radio, something happening somewhere, right? Now here's something concrete. How many times did people actually engage with us? It's like 8,000 people. I, by writing twice a month, can get 60, 70,000 people to come to my blog every month. How bad is it that you could manage 8,000 out of 256 million brand moments? Now, not all of them will come online, but given how close their brand is to the things that they do online, it is pathetic. And yet, it's that mental model. We're going to shout at people, cross our fingers, and hope for the best. That's really not how the web works.
I've been talking a lot lately about how no more websites, only publishers. And it's sort of, you know, preliminary thoughts about if you're going to just have a website that is essentially brochureware, corporate lingo, jargon, like you say, screaming at people, there are other brands in your vertical or industry that are more apt to engage, whether it's the conversation, whether it's just providing better, richer content experiences, etc. Is that the sort of stuff you're going towards as an analytics guy as well?
I very much so. And that the kinds of measurement systems that now I am looking at, helping develop new metrics that I'm helping create, are all go towards taking what you said in that blog post, a wonderful blog post, and saying, all right, what Mitch is saying is absolutely key, and perhaps what it's going to take to get marketers moving finally in the direction is to help them realize how immensely measurable what Mitch is saying is, and that's really what I'm trying to help us all along with a number of people to try and move forward by putting measurement systems in place. But everything you do, I'll give you a great example. Right, I was in Canada recently, and I saw the website for Vim. You know, Vim, right? I mean, you know Vim, right, Mitch? And laundry stuff. Washing things, and yeah. And if you go to Vim.com or CA, I apologize, forgot the URL. It's a woman standing on a ladder, And you can see her rear end very prominently, and her hand is raised. She's cleaning some window, whatnot, right? So essentially, and the bottom of that ladder are pictures of Wim products. Fabulous, right? Now, this company is saying you should buy Wim because here's a woman's rear end showing you something. Now, there are dedicated websites to see women's rear end if I want to, right? I don't want that from Wim. Now, I want you to contrast that with 7thGeneration.com. A small company in Burlington, Vermont, it sells laundry things, right? When you go to 7th Generation's website, you see in the middle there is a small box that shows their products, and surrounded all around their box, that box, are things that tell you, all things that are geared to telling you one single message: join our jihad in changing the world and saving the planet. Think about a way of doing selling, right? What are they selling on that website? That they're not selling a woman's rear end and then the cleaning supply. What they're saying is, P.S., we sell cleaning supplies, but please be a part of our path and ability to go change the world, and that's why you should buy a product. And the kind of connection they can make with the brand, the kind of conversation they can have, is massively different than what this traditional company accomplished. Of course, 7th Generation then creates a very unique annual report. They have a blog consistently that they post to. They have a Twitter account where they actively engage with people who write about 7th Generation and give feedback. I noticed a recent tweet where they responded to somebody who said, the scoop in my washing detergent was missing. Another person who wanted feedback. Now think about how many people are going to see this happening. And every single time that through their Twitter account or through their blog they reach one person, the person at the other end is going to go tell many more people that I'm not doing business with a soulless corporation. I am working for, I am a part of a cause, and I'm working with a real human being. That I think, is a shift that many marketers are being slow to accept. And I could tell you this about Rogers. I could tell you this about Tesco, which is in the UK. I could tell you this about some of the more prominent American brands and Canadian brands and South American brands. It's just really not geographically unique.
Yeah, it has to do with dumb marketers. That's universal.
I think many marketers, the audience that I spoke with recently, the marketers there were actually a bunch of them from Harvard, a bunch of them from really good schools. It's that I think at some point in their evolutionary process that they weren't exposed to the new ways in which marketing is happening. And then especially, this is true especially for big companies, and they'll end up going to one of these big companies that's really, really good at using GRPs to measure the TV and pimping coupons. And they're just, it's just such a machine that in that machine, even if they do bring any level of creativity to evolve, that machine will crush that creativity. And that truly is kind of sad.
Your world must be so dramatically different from the way it was a couple years ago, because I think anyone listening to this who hears the words web analytics will automatically think of things like, how many people are coming to my site?
Right.
Where are they going? What are they doing? Why are they doing that? How can we get all of those people to do the things we want them to do? These are some of the fundamental questions that people do ask of their web analytics packages, their web analytics professionals, et cetera, et cetera. You're saying something that I think runs very counter-cyclical to this type of business professional.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say you're working on new models, and when you say it's not about how many people, it's about who, and it's about what they're saying,
exactly.
What does that analytics look like then? What are we measuring?
So partly the book Webanalytics 2.0 was very much, it's a cutesy title, right? 2.0 behind everything. But my holy intent there simply was to say, look, you're used to using these clickstream tools like Google Analytics and Amateur and Web Trends and all, and that's well and good, but that is a new model and a new way of thinking. And the 2.0 simply denotes an expansion in the sources of data and the types of metrics and the kinds of analysis you would do in order to measure success. So the metrics that you just mentioned are all wonderful, but to me they are like the first week metrics Those are questions you should ask during the first week of doing business on the web, and then kind of get over, get them out of your system and move on to bigger and better things, because those things are not really going to help you make the kinds of connections with your customers that you want to do, or make as much money as you want to, honest to God. So when people say, here's a good example, Mitch, what is your favorite metric in the world? And it's kind of hard to pick and one, but you know what my favorite metric in the world is? It's task completion rate. And it's a metric that's measured using a survey, right? Or it's a survey that might pop up on exit when people leave your site. Or it's using a little feedback button on the side of your pages, an unobtrusive button asking feedback. But what task completion rate does is flips your thinking completely to a different direction. For example, most website owners are focused on measuring conversion rate. Now, conversion rates can be there for nonprofit, for-profit, e-commerce, non-e-commerce sites, okay? So conversion rate is a very broad term. But what people say is, hey, I'm interested in a one-night stand with the people who come to my site. Did they come in the session? Did they buy or do something I value? And if not, goodbye to them. And the problem with one-night stands is you feel kind of dirty the next day, right? They don't lead to long-term relationships. What task completion rate says is, when people leave your website, ask them, why did they come? Why are you here? And then ask them, were you able to complete your task? And now, rather than simply focusing at, let's say 100 people come to your site, less than 20% of the people might come be there to buy, or even remotest intent to buy. And what we end up doing in our analysis is we ignore the 80%. So what task completion rate says, I'm going to ask, focus on all 100 people who came to my website. I'm going to understand why all of them came to my website. Oh, only a minority came to buy. That's fine. What did the others want? And did I meet their expectations? So if they decide to buy somewhere else, if they decide to make a referral, if they apply, decide to give me a lead, if they decide to apply for a job, if they decide to do anything else other than buying, I met their expectations. I helped deliver success to them. That's the power of shifting to task completion rate, because you say, rather than focusing on me and my gratification, I'm going to focus on the customers' and visitors' gratification. That's just one, right? Now take Twitter as an example. I don't measure the number of followers. I measure conversation rate. I measure message amplification. I measure how my second-level network has grown. Because if I say something of value, I can reach 17,000 people today. But if I say something of incredible of value and it gets retweeted, I have a capacity to reach 1.7 million unique names today. That's the size of my second-level network today. That's it, right? 1.7 million unique names deduped for spam bots. Can you imagine that power? But you can only go and leverage the power if at the top of your head, you're not solving for followers. You're solving for retweets. And how do you solve for retweets? By saying something incredible of value. Those are two concrete examples of the kinds of things that I think the way you measure things then start to change how you think about what is important. And then you do marketing correctly.
And so the web analytics final metrics in terms of people understanding where you're going with this is not necessarily a number. It could be an outcome. It could be a link to a business objective, something like that.
Absolutely, positively, very much so. For an e-commerce website, I solve for different metrics. I just worked with a newspaper website, Mitch, and I said, I don't care about the number of page views. I don't care about average page views. I don't care about the number of visits. Let us measure and hardcore focus on visitor loyalty and visitor recency. That's what you're solving for. What you're solving for is how many times did people come during a given time period to my newspaper website, my content website, and was I able to reduce the gap between each visit of the same person? That shows you that you're creating a longer-term relationship with the customer rather than simply going through a one-night stand. That's just another concrete example, right, of saying that we can focus on things that ultimately add value. Now, if you ask every sort of web analytics person, they always say, yeah, and what you measure depends on your business goals, right? And it really does. And often people have a bit of a hard time figuring out what their business goals are, which is kind of sad, but it's true. But by helping evangelize these kinds of different metrics, I'm hoping that it prods people more to figure out what they're solving for and focus on solving for those things in the right way.
But when you say something like that to a newspaper, as an example, doesn't it make them puke? Because, I mean, to a certain extent, that's a fine, admirable metric. But what does that have to do with CPM and pumping more banner ads into people's faces? Because that's really their goal at that point.
It really is, and you're absolutely right that the very first thing they said is, well, if we focus not so much on page views but by making customers happy, I'm going to lose money. And I said, what I'm saying is you are going to lose money in the short term, but if you create an engaged audience that visits your website more frequently, you are going to be set up for long-term success. Right now, by executing the strategy that you are executing, by focusing on your CPMs rather than on your customers, you are losing money slowly every day, and you're going to die at some point. The only way to the trade-off I'm saying is it better for you to slowly die over time, which is a choice many people make, because by the time they die, they will be in different jobs.
Right. And it transfers them over faster.
The trade-off is I'm gonna take some small short-term pain, but I am guaranteeing a much more longer-term sustainability for my business. And this applies not only for newspapers, but it applies for soap marketers. It applies for people who sell cars. It applies for people who do anything that they do on the web now.
When I got the final copy of the book, Web Analytics 2.0, I got to tell you, I couldn't believe how big and thick and rich it was. And what's surprising about that is, having written the book you wrote before that, which was so comprehensive, it sort of staggered me that that much had changed in that little of time. And I'm not just talking about new functionality to tools like a Google Analytics or, you know, Microsoft or Yahoo coming out with a free analytics tool, and you got to talk about it because it's what you do. I mean, the mind shift too. Like, it was almost as if everything within the web analytics world moved a little, creating something bigger.
I completely agree with you. I when I first wrote the book proposal to Wiley, I did a book the page estimate, and then I was dramatically wrong, because once I started to get into the groove of things and started writing book, I couldn't believe, oh, I got to write about video, and I got to write about universal search, and I got to write about Twitter, and I got to write about engaging people on Facebook and multi-touch attribution analysis and all of these things that Mitch literally came up in the last 18 months. Yeah. It was amazing how much things had changed and the more I got into it, the more excited I got into it. And I wrote about mobile. I remember writing about mobile, and I implemented 5-6 tools on my blog, and I got so excited about the kind of data I could get and how I could show the right kind of mobile ads to the right people, and how I could use the GeoIP location through their phone to do various. I was just so excited about these things. And then many of them have literally happened in the last 18 months. But that does bring us to this real, I have to admit to myself, a problem that people at the other end do face, which is the thing that excites me beyond anything about the web is how fast it evolves, how amazingly quickly it changes, and the new tools that are available, the new ways to interact with people and customers and achieve things that just were nearly impossible. And yet that change is really hard for many people to accept. It's very hard for people to have the mental model that things I'm going to learn today, tools I might get up to speed on today, might not be relevant in 3, 4, 6 months or maybe next year. You know, today I got to get really good at PPC with Google, and I got to get really good at creating Facebook fan pages. And a year from now, I'm thinking about the new augmented reality thing that has come up that makes both Google and Facebook irrelevant. And yet, I think that at our core being, we somehow have to evolve ourselves to be excited about the possibilities that come up to us and be able to change and be more flexible in our approaches. Because at the end of the day, I think the human beings, the human beings, right, not marketers, but the human beings that will be successful at the highest level will be the human beings that have a DNA that is inherently flexible and agile. Right? Those two words are just so key. But it does pose a challenge because that's not how we have worked in the past. We learn a job, we do it for a whole bunch of years. I'm not going to say 40 years, but let's say we do it for 10, 12 years, and then move to our next job, and we may or may not learn something, right? We rise to our level of incompetence in organizations. That does not have to be true anymore. It does not have to be true anymore.
But at the same time, things move terribly slowly. I mean, if you look at – no, it's true. Like if you look at what you brought forward in web analytics an hour a day, and even forget that. Let's put it aside. Let's look at tools like Omniture and Google Analytics and all this stuff. Most companies still aren't even taking a peek at the top level of that stuff. So I think you're right in terms of things move fast and they're exciting and, you know, Avinash with his hair on fire, I get it. But at the same time, nothing changes, and marketers still look and go, pink is pretty, so we're going in that direction.
I think that it is true for a subset of marketers, and I think it is probably true for many marketers who are by choice or not by choice in larger corporations. That Mitch, honestly, you and I probably tend to get exposed to a lot more. And I think many more of them are probably still stuck leveraging probably the bare minimums of what the web offers. And they perhaps are not exposed to or enthused about the amazing amounts of possibilities to get people to buy toilet paper by thinking very differently than couponing. But I have to tell you that it is not true for pretty much every single small company I know of. It is not true for every small company I know in technology, in consumer products, in tampons, in iPads, in pick your favorite. It really isn't true. And for large companies, it certainly poses a challenge. And that's why, Mitch, if I could bring it back all the way to your very first question to me, that's really why I have become a marketer, because I have realized my job is not to evangelize the use of data. My job is to evangelize the power of this new marketing through the web channel. If I can convince them of that, I know for a fact I can get them to do marketing differently and do it using data.
I think when people still think of you, of Google, of analytics, they're thinking of search, text-based websites, click-throughs. You're talking about a world of text, images, audio, video, micro-content, whether it's Twitter or whatnot, and engaging that. How different are the analytics that we're looking at, putting aside text and search, from your perspective? Is this a dramatic sort of like, okay, so we have traditional GRPs, we have web analytics, and then we have this other stuff over here for things that we sort of haven't really quantified or qualified all that well yet?
It is very different. It really is very different. I think one of the reasons that many brands, many people try some of these other things that we evangelize, whether it's using Twitter better or Facebook better or doing better even display advertising or really any of these new online channels, the reason they do it, they are not doing it as well as they could be is because they are not measuring them correctly. So the kind of the way in which we will collect the data, Mitch, is now very different than using Google Analytics, Omniture, and all that stuff, right? And the way in which we will create metrics is very different. So I will give you one concrete example of this, right? Now, I was looking over the PepsiCo Twitter account, and what I did is I ran that through TweetSike. This is a great example of a new tool to measure something different. And what TweetSike did is it creates a profile of the PepsiCo account and highlights the 23 psychological traits of the PepsiCo Twitter account And through their tweets, what are they saying about their brand? Now, it's a completely different way in which you could measure brand perception. What we've done traditionally in TV, radio, magazines, we measure brand perception, right? Now here is a radically different way of measuring it on 23 different psychological attributes. I did that for you too yesterday, Mitch, because I was using it in a presentation, and I'm going to contrast your psychological traits. What does your Twitter profile say about brand Mitch versus what does mine say about brand Avinash? Completely different measure. So when Twistimash goes in and meets a client, I am hoping that in addition to the traditional metrics they're using, they'll move to using these kinds of new ways of processing data and measuring it. Another one, well, I could go on, but that's a good example of how the data, the way we collect data, Mitch, is different rather than throwing a JavaScript tag or using a weblog file, right? The data we collect is different, and the tools and the measurements that we will use are also very different.
So, because the book has been in market for a couple months now, I'm presuming books 3 and 4 are already finished on your side?
No, but I thought I would write one book and I would be done with it. But I have to honestly tell you that I really enjoyed writing this book, because while it let me put more of my voice in it and let me write a lot, and so it's much more of a fun, easy to read book, and you'll see a lot of me in it, even when you read technical things, which it doesn't have a lot. It's more a marketing book. But I have this next book in my head, and it has these chapters, and it's all because of you, because you introduced me to your publisher, this wonderful person with whom I had a great conversation. So perhaps there will be book 3, but not for some time.
Well, as long as it's dedicated to me, I'm fine with that.
I will.
Your wife will love that. The wife and kids love that, yeah.
The other thing which I found, but I have to quickly tell people on the podcast that in my acknowledgments, I thanked two people. And only two people, I think. And one of them is Mitchell. That's how much I have benefited from knowing you and from your kindness to me. And it is meant in its most sincerity. I was gonna say, Mitch, that one of the other things I found is because the first book and the second book both raise all my proceeds go to charity. I have enjoyed that a lot, because when I got the first contract from Wiley, it was like 10 grand, I think. And I was like, oh, it's okay, it's good money. I was into it, and I was, you know, just not making that much money. I was like, oh, yeah, we'll give her 10,000, no big deal. But in 2 years, you know, the first book, my proceeds are $90,000. And it's like, there's just no way I can raise that much money for charity. It's just impossible. I just don't have that much money. And so if there is another book someday, I think because I'm becoming addicted to taking a part of my passion, packaging it into a book, and then raising money for charity, I think that process has been so satisfying for me. I taught a class at Stanford last week, and I said that really every person, this is the power of the web, right? This is what you preach, Mitch, every day, is I, a normal person, can now go accomplish this little humble thing of helping change a small, tiny part of the world in a very tiny, small way. It should be a lesson to every marketer as to what you can accomplish if you embrace this medium.
It's an amazing, I mean, you know, you do everything with so much heart and soul and logic that it's hard to sort of match in terms of energy and insight. And so that's why these books are so valuable. I've been frequently saying to people who ask me what book to buy, tell them to get your book. And I say, it's an embarrassment when there's a marketer in practice who doesn't have or has read your books, because it's like the missing manual to their life. The information in your two books, and specifically in the new one, I think is what will get people over all of the questions they have. And it's such a hard thing to say, because it sounds I'm shilling for a friend, it sounds like I'm selling. But I mean, I mean that with all sincerity. I find it negligent, if you're a marketer, to not have your books. I really do.
You're very kind, Mitch. I really, really appreciate the support. I think that at the minimum, if people buy the book, and it's probably like $25 at most, I am positive that it will give them two or three things of doing their job in ways that will get them promoted, right? And that really at the end is kind of a selfish goal to have. But that was my hope. My hope was it will change your mind enough that it'll at least get you one promotion if you execute two or three things.
I think that's the name of the third book. It's gotta be, there are two things in this book that will get you a promotion. Just call it that. Just see how the thing. I think you'll have a lot of kids smiling.
Thank you.
Last question before we take off, Avinash, is I never ask. You know, we talk all the time. You're like a co-host here. I never ask because I don't know if you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say. So feel free to sort of tell me you can't talk. What's going on at Google? How are things at Google? What can you tell us about things that are happening at Google? Search, whatever's got you excited there.
I can tell you two things that I'm supremely excited about at Google, and I'm slowly trying to be a part of that here as well. One is actually maps. I think that people have underestimated the power of having access to hyper-local information, whether through your mobile devices or even actually on your desktops. And then this ability of everything on a map, not just a go from this direction to that, but every piece of information on a map surround you, envelop you all around you, and the way that it changes how I behave and how I buy things and how I look for information, it's incredible. My wife and I went to a restaurant yesterday, and before we got in, I stood three steps behind the door. I opened Google Goggles and I simply pointed my smartphone at the restaurant's front end, and it automatically recognized by GPS exactly where I was standing, and using augmented reality, it showed me user ratings for that restaurant. And we did not walk in because the ratings were just 3 stars out of 5.
Right.
And I just moved my camera to a couple other restaurants, found a 4.5 star, walked in there. See how it changed? I'm really excited about how this hyper-local information is changing user behavior, and how do you measure it? So that's one. And then, of course, the other one, perhaps connected a little bit, is Android. I think that Google is very excited about mobile, and you've seen, of course, the Nexus One. You saw it before many people in the world did, Mitch.
All right, yeah.
I think that as is coming to market with a phone that is so smart, and there was already the iPhone that is a magnificently wonderful phone, and now there's another phone that's also very good, and the world will decide if it's magnificently good, but it's a very good phone that allows you to do things very differently. I now walk into meetings with just my Nexus One phone rather than having a laptop. And the way my world is coming together there, and what does it mean in terms of marketing? What does it mean in how we will behave? I think that these two things, hyperlocal information and then mobile devices, are two things that you've seen Google talk about a lot. But I think that people underestimate how important they are, and how important they are to Google, and in fact every other company probably on the planet, and how much Google is passionate and investing in these two areas. And you will see some very innovative things come out even during the course of this year, much less sort of in the next few years.
Yeah, my thoughts on Nexus One have been synthesized by this idea that Bill Gates, you know, talked early days about there being a computer on every desk, and I really think, you know, understanding, I think, a little bit of what Google does and how they act, that this is really an extension of that, to get a computer into every hand almost. And there are areas that don't have iPhones and Blackberries. There are areas that are going to need different types of devices, et cetera, et cetera. And I really am excited about the phone too.
Yes, and I think that I think search, of course, is very important to Google. The search engines, Microsoft and Baidu and Yahoo, are very important to the world, and they serve a lot of key purposes. But I think that many of us don't realize right underneath our feet the world of how we experience the web is dramatically changing. Dramatically, sort of emphasize that word. As a marketer, I do advise the people who listen to our podcast here, Mitch, that they should at least take, you know, 5-10% of their time to get exposed to this, because it will prepare them better for the future. Even how do you do business? It's going to change a lot.
The big message right now is for people to go online or run out and get a copy of Web Analytics 2.0 by Avinash Kaushik. The subtitle is The Art of Online Accountability, A Signs of Customer Centricity. It is a crazy, amazing read. Don't be scared by the title. It is a marketing business book unlike any other you will ever read, and I hope people do buy it. Avinash, let people know where they can find you.
Just type Avinash into Google. That's probably the best way to find me. And the book is at webanalytics20.com, the number 2 and 0. .com.
Be sure to find you all the time at Occam's Razor.
Exactly, my blog.
Thanks so much for your time, Avinash.
Thank you, Mitch. It's always a pleasure.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
So, dear, the world has gone quiet. I know you'll wake up again when you feel the sun. So please breathe, I know you're pretending. There's blood at the discotheque, so sick of what we've become. Come on, let go.
Listening to 6 Pixels of Separation. Please email all comments and feedback to Mitch@twistymaz.com, and please check out the blog at www.twistymaz.com/blog.